Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. I hope you're well. I'm right here with my good buddy from the QTR podcast. His name is Chris Irons. He is in the house right now live, and we're actually going to take some of your calls. So if you guys want to ask Mr. Irons a question directly, click the link there, and we'll get into that in about 10 minutes here. But prior to that, I want him to go through and discuss his recent blog post, because on this channel, as you guys know, we really try to promote the message of free market capitalism, but liberty and freedom. And so Chris emailed me this morning, showed me this article. I said, hey, let's get him on, talk about it live, and he can kind of walk us through his thoughts. So let's go to that article right now. And this is on quotetheraven.substack.com. So walk us through it.
Well, it's a little bit of a lengthy read, and there's a lot of editorialization about my personal feelings, which usually I just hold for my therapist and don't publish. But I mean, you know, it's half kind of a mushy holiday post and half a post about being practical. And, you know, I write in the post that, you know, I had a long time to kind of think about why heading into this holiday season, some things felt totally different for me. And one of those reasons was, I think, the fact that it feels like we're going to return a little bit closer to normalcy this year than we were last year. I mean, look, people like me, I've been operating pretty much normally since March of 2020. And me and you have talked about this before. And so, you know, it's not as if I've altered my lifestyle much because of COVID, other than what, you know, government mandated alterations have done, lockdowns and mask mandates and those types of things. I mean, they've been inconveniences and stuff like that. But other than that, you know, I train jiu-jitsu. I haven't stopped training. I haven't stopped exercising. My diet hasn't changed. I'm not doing different things or going to different places than I used to. So, you know, for me and you, I think maybe this holiday season isn't going to be extremely different, but I think for a lot of people, there has been, and my family is included in this, you know, like many other families, we had a different holiday season last year than we have for the last 20 years. And part of the article is about, you know, what that break from tradition does to people. And more importantly, what returning to that tradition, which I think a lot of people will be doing this year, regardless of, you know, what religion you are, what holiday you celebrate, what returning to that tradition is going to mean to people and why it's important. And, you know, because it really, it encompasses all the things that are wonderful about the holidays. And we'll discuss that. But the point of the article was, you know, to point out that I think everybody around the world has been burdened with a psychological, you know, load that they've been carrying on their shoulders for the last 2 years. And, you know, I talk about early on in the pandemic, I put out a tweet that said, you know, people need to start doing mental gymnastics and preparing for what it's going to be like to see the things that they're going to see during the pandemic. We didn't know what the severity would be, but, you know, plan on seeing masks everywhere, plan on seeing, you know, people in Tyvek suits. And, you know, back in early 2020, I was dismissed as a fearmonger for saying that, but it was really, not to toot my horn, but a prescient kind of statement about, you know, how different things were going to be in the future. And they're different because the government's kind of making them different for us. And also because people are whipping themselves up into this psychosis over the last 2 years about the virus. And I think people are making it much harder on themselves than they need to. I write in the article that, you know, look, if you're elderly, if you're immunocompromised, take care of yourself, take care of your family. But I think everybody needs to just exhale a little bit. And I feel like this year, the holidays are a great opportunity for people to do that. And the title of the post is COVID is over if you want it, right? Because I was listening to that Happy Christmas song by John Lennon and Yoko Ono, where they say war is over if you want it. And I was thinking, you know, COVID's over if we want it. I mean, obviously it's not over, But right. in your mind, it's over if you want it. I mean, it's been over for 18 months for me. And I got COVID this year, you know, and lived through 4 days of flu-like symptoms. I was lucky, you know, I didn't stop working out. I, you know, just kind of slowed down a little bit. I know a lot of people have it rougher. A lot of people have to face the reality of it, whether it's getting it themselves or their family or friends getting it, or maybe even losing a loved one or their businesses being negatively affected. But mentally, it's over if you want it. You know, you can put it behind you mentally. And I think that the return to tradition for a lot of people this year around the holiday time is, I think, will help a lot of people exhale. And it will, and I think people need to know that they deserve a break. People need to know that they deserve to return to the things that make the holidays wonderful, which is, you know, giving and family and friends and being with your community and being around people. And a lot of things that I feel like people have deprived themselves of over the last 18 months that wind up being counterintuitive and doing a lot more harm than good. So the article talks about that. And it also talks about, you know, well, what have we gotten over the last 2 years as a result of listening to government mandated lockdowns, you know, spurious kind of regulations? What has been the thanks that we've gotten, you know, or the people that have, you know, went along with the government's narrative? What's the thanks that they've gotten for doing that? Well, they've been lied to and deceived pretty much at every chance possible, right, by Dr. Fauci, who claims that, you know, they never funded gain of function research, which, of course, we know now is bullshit, you know, dismissing the lab leak theory, which we know now, of course, is like the leading theory as to the origins of the virus. Obviously, me and you were talking about that 2 years ago.
Biden came out December 2020, said we will not have mandates. And then he came out.
He also said in September 2020. That, you know, you will not get the virus if you take the vaccine, which, of course, turned out to be bullshit. So, you know, the media has done everything they can to whip up hysteria. They have, you know, lied to you about a potentially efficacious drug in ivermectin. You know, for the thanks that you've gotten for following the science or the mainstream narrative has been that you have been lied to or deceived or maybe even unintentionally just misinformed, I think, at every turn. And, you know, you have people like the CDC director who, when we first were about to launch the vaccines, coming out and saying, well, you know, I still have an impending feeling of doom, right? She said,
right.
You get things like that, and it's an assault on the senses. For people like us, me and you, I mean, we consider ourselves to be independent free thinkers for the most part. You know, even for us, it's a little bit laborious to deal with. But for people that aren't like us, that either, you know, they don't have the time to pour through the research on this stuff. You know, they're just trusting that what they're told is for their benefit. Those people have experienced a full-on bludgeoning by the media and by the government over the last 2 years. And the point of my blog post is to let people know that, you know, even like I said, you can be cautious, you can protect those around you, you can take whatever precautions make you comfortable. But man, it would be a great year to kind of make it over in your head. It would be a great year to take a deep breath and exhale and start to think about taking steps forward back towards what life looked like pre-COVID. And I think a great way to do that is to, you know, embrace the holiday traditions that maybe like my family, you did away with last year. I feel like there's no better time of the year. And you know, I had this kind of great feeling of relief that maybe that was going to start to happen this year. And I got a little, I got a little like emotional about it, to be honest with you. And that's what caused me to write the blog post. And I think, you know, some of my stuff on my blog is behind a paywall, but I made this post free because I feel like between now and Christmas, it's going to, you know, it'll be kind of my evergreen thoughts as to how we can use the holiday season to pivot towards reason, towards, like you said, freedom, liberty, and towards embracing the things that are important to us. COVID's going to be here forever. Just get it through your head. You know, it's not going anywhere, and you can't avoid it. I was talking to a friend the other day. You know, they have an immunocompromised member of their family, basically trying to live in a bubble, you know? And I'm like, you know, it's tough. It's extremely tough. And, you know, you care for somebody, so you want to do that. My parents are older, you know, I don't want them exposed to it, but I've made peace with the reality that at some point, no matter how many, you know, layers of Tyvek suits they wear when they go to the grocery store, they're going to be exposed to it. And that's just the nature of the virus. It's invisible.
The risks are the risks. At some point, you've got to move on because it's going to be here. You're not going to eradicate it. And I feel so bad for those people. And it's just, you know, what's their end game? Because
George, I think COVID or no COVID, right? How old are you, George?
48.
Right. You're 48. I'll be 39 this year. And, you know, how many years do we have left between the two of us? Less than 100 probably combined between the two of us, right? I mean, let's just be reasonable. Probably right around there, hopefully, but probably less.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no real better time in my mind to start living and to put this behind us in our heads than now. And I just, you know, I've been doing it for 18 months and, you know, it's amazing to me to still see people. We were visiting friends last week, you know, people that won't touch doorknobs or, you know, are wearing masks in public and, you know, when they're outdoors. And it's just, it's starting to appear like some type of psychosis at this point. When we know, you know, we have these remedies available, we have the vaccine available, we have these, you know, pills available, but also, you know, we have monoclonal antibodies, we have vitamins. And so the blog post lays out not only a lot of the criticisms I have of the government and the media, but why I think, you know, the holidays are a great spot to start anew.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. What would you say to the person out there whose family is consumed by this fear? And, you know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about a New York Times study that I saw where I believe it was over 40% of Democrats polled believe there's an over 50% chance that you go to the hospital if you get the cerveza sickness. So, I mean, if your family falls into that category, what do you do?
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I think, you know, I think you can try to inform yourself. I mean, you could try to obviously, I mean, it's baffling to me that people would get their information from objective data and still arrive at those conclusions.
Well, I think they're just relying on the mainstream media.
Right. So the answer is, you know, you turn that off. And that's what wrote at the end of my article. I wrote, no matter what kind of precautions you want to take this holiday season, I support whatever they are, but do yourself a favor and turn the media off, turn the TV off, turn the internet off, hug your family, hug the dog, you know, and worry about the things that matter. Some people I just don't think you're going to get through to. I think some people are going to always be useful idiots for the media. And of course, that's how the media business model works, right? If it bleeds, it leads. Why? Because it draws in people that want their talking points handed to them. They want their thoughts handed to them by somebody. You know, the idea of walking around parroting everything Don Lemon says to me is horrifying to me. I mean, that would be, I'd probably rather be dead than be walking around parroting his ideas. But for some people, that's the prescription. They see him, you know, and look, you can say the same about me. I go around and parrot a lot of things that Peter Schiff says when it comes to the economy. I think he's right on a lot of things. So I don't know. I think my advice would be to just try to do a little research on your own to the extent that you can and seek therapy. I mean, that's serious advice, not a joke. I mean, I think that a lot of people would probably benefit from talking to somebody after what we've endured over the last, 2 years. I've always been a proponent for going to therapy. It's helped me out immensely. I think everybody should do it at some point in their life. That's it. Other than that, try to just keep an open mind.
I think at a certain point, and I don't know how you'd encourage your friends and family members to see this, but you've got to remember that just because you're alive doesn't necessarily mean you're living.
You're living, right. Yeah, I knew exactly what you're going to say there, right? Yeah. Because there's no point of, and I speak from experience on this because I used to be a nervous wreck and I would, I would obsess over everything all the time. And I remember one of the first times I ever talked to a therapist years ago. You know, I remember she asked me, well, why do you do this, this, and this? And I would say, because I want freedom. And she said to me, that doesn't sound very free at all. You don't sound like you're very free at all. And I was like, holy shit, light bulb, you know, like, because before then I was like, well, what the fuck am I doing here? I'm talking to this lady who doesn't know anything about me. And then somebody says something like that. And you're like, wow, you're right. You know, just because you're alive doesn't mean that you're living. So, but that's something that people have to figure out on their own. It's not my job to go out and do that. I'm not a licensed, you know, psychiatrist. I shouldn't be out giving mental health advice. I'm trying to just hold my own shit together. But, you know, I think you're right. And I think that's a great point. And I think maybe some people will realize that. And I think, unfortunately, some people won't. But I think getting over the COVID hysteria stepping stone is a great start. And I think it's a tough war to fight for some people, especially if you take your talking points from the media, because you have been assaulted. Your senses have been assaulted. The media thrives off of hysteria, you know, and off of just drawing people in by any means necessary. When they did the ivermectin story about Joe Rogan, the amount of completely factless headlines that went up on the screen that just showed, and I hadn't spent a lot of time studying ivermectin. I listened to a couple podcasts with Dr. Pierre Corey, maybe totaling 2 or 3 hours, you know, and I knew when that happened that they were way off base and they were just straight up lying. So like when Joe Rogan talks about that on his podcast, he's 100% right. And if I were him, I would have sued the shit out of them. I mean, there's just, you know, I think he's just being nice. He said in that one episode, should I sue them? But like, they were just making completely baseless, you know, factual inaccuracies about him, which is ridiculous. And he has the power to do that. And I think that they're not going to learn unless they get taught a lesson like that. That's what happened with the Nick Sandman case, you know. And now I drew analogs to that in another blog post I did yesterday about the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, you know, where they, you know, the media has taken every opportunity to call this kid a white supremacist, and a jury just found him not guilty on all charges. You know, so now he's got a clean bill of, not guilty. And it's time to take a look at everything that the media and politicians said about you over the last year that has been said without any evidence, and go back and just absolutely smack them. And they deserve it. You know, the Nick Sandman case was a perfect example. You know, that kid was there minding his own business. But you have these people on the left that they're, you know, they're so outraged and so hysterical. They don't even know what they're hysterical about. They're not examining the facts. I was just talking to somebody about the, you know, unfortunate death of George Floyd again the other day, which I know we've talked about before. But, you know, the facts of what happened on that day from the beginning of that encounter to the end of it versus the picture that was painted by the media are just, they're on two completely different opposite ends of the spectrum. And I can admit and concede that, you know, that officer put a blood choke on him and likely contributed to his death, you know. But even if we agree on those things, you know, I had somebody say to me months ago, there's nothing you can say to me that's going to convince me that he didn't intend on killing that guy. And I was like, you mean it was premeditated murder? They were like, yeah. I'm like, there's no evidence for that. There was no evidence throughout the entire interaction that race had anything to do with it. So, you know, there's people that will examine and scrutinize the facts, and people that will react on emotion and take their lines from the media. And it's about trying to hold accountable the lies But I think most importantly, to make sure that your mental fitness is strong first and foremost. And then from there, you can kind of act from a position of having your shit together when you want to turn around and maybe lob criticisms back at the mainstream media machine, as I did on my blog and as I often do on my blog. My blog is called Fringe Finance because somebody thought that they were insulting me once by saying that my podcast was Fringe Finance, you know, and I said, all right, you know,
good idea.
There's no problem with existing on the fringe, because what I'm trying to figure out, and I'm wrong just like the next guy on a lot of things, and I'm right on some things too. But what I'm trying to figure out are all these important little things that are in this gray area between misunderstanding and truths that we just haven't embraced yet.
Yeah.
You know, and those things reside
far more than the mainstream media in the last 2 years.
Those things reside so close to each other, right? The truth we haven't embraced yet, and you know, things that people don't understand, they're right there with one another. So you have to get to that fringe and have some kind of Socratic dialogue, some kind of question and answer, some kind of discussion about it. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to whittle away at what the truth is and, you know, what best practices are in, you know, the world of macroeconomics or whatever I'm talking about from there. So that's the situation we have here with COVID now.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for. Chris, I know your time's limited. Let's take a couple of callers. We got a bunch of people here that want to ask you questions.
This is the first call-in show I've ever done.
Yeah, so a caller, what is your name?
My name's Ed from California.
Ed, awesome. Thanks for calling in, and you're on with my good buddy Chris Irons.
It is awesome to talk to both of you. I've learned so much from both of your guys' podcasts, YouTube videos. I mean, awesome. I can't thank you. I was following George back when he was in Medellin, buying real estate, making a show.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Chris,
thank you very much for the time you take in watching the videos. I can speak for Chris. We sincerely appreciate it.
Yeah. You're looking good, Chris. You look younger than like the first time I've seen you. You're aging backward.
Well, that's good sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this time 2 years ago was my last jiu-jitsu competition, and I went in overweight and I did terribly. And so ever since then, I've been motivated to try to, like, you know, stay in better shape, and I'm like chomping at the bit to get back and compete. So I appreciate the compliment. That's nice.
That's awesome. Looks like it's working. I wanted to ask you guys about, so I quit my job back last year and moved out of town. I wanted to get out of the city. So me and my wife moved to a more rural area. It's in California still, but it's up in like the foothills, Sierra Nevada mountains. So it's a lot different up here. The people are a lot different. It's a lot freer. I'm a diesel mechanic by trade. So I started my own mobile diesel repair business. I got a truck. I put all my tools on the utility bed and just started doing mobile diesel repair, and it's working out okay. But I've also been investing a little bit, and I bought mostly commodities and stuff like that, which I think are, you know, pretty good buy. But then recently I came up with this crazy idea to buy Evergrande because its name was drug through the mud, and it seemed like a really like a Jim Rogers type thing, you know, like it's undervalued. Everybody was talking all the crap on it. So and then like 2 weeks went by where I didn't hear anything about it. And then I heard something about Beijing was going to do some kind of bailout. And I was like, you know, if they don't go under, there's a lot of upside potential here. So I wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
You're the pro on China. I know the junk debt in China is trading at like 25%, something astronomical.
Yeah, and I haven't really, I don't know enough about it. I don't know about the capital structure well enough. I don't know, you know, I'm guessing it trades like what we would call an equity stub right now, right? Which is the equity of a company that is likely to go bankrupt or severely dilute itself, but could have ridiculous upside if, you know, they are can kind of keep the capital structure somewhat together. And, you know, in the case, maybe they get a bailout from Beijing or something like that. But I don't know enough about Evergrande individually to say whether or not it's something where I think, you know, it's worth even a lottery ticket on. You know, I don't give financial advice. What I would say is personally, if I was going to invest in Evergrande's equity, it would be a very, very, very small amount of the total money that I have. Very small, because you have a distressed asset and you have a distressed asset in China. And so I don't know, what did you buy? You bought the over the counter. Is there an over the counter?
Yeah, something? EG, NRY, something like that.
It's
very speculative for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I would go into an investment like that expecting to lose 100% of everything that I put into it. And I don't know it. I don't know the capital structure of the business, and I haven't followed the story close enough over the last week or two to give you an idea of really where I think it could possibly go or what, you know. I would just say that I'm generally negative on US listed anything that's based in China. China is a black box. Their government's completely unpredictable. You know, I own a few Chinese equities that I think are the closest ones to being the exception to that rule, but still kind of fall under it. None of them are distressed. You know, personally, I own Tencent Music and Tencent. I like those names. If I had to own anything in China, I wouldn't touch Alibaba. I wouldn't touch, you know, pretty much anything. And so with Evergrande, you know, my strategy, if I was doing it, would be prepared to lose 100% of what I put into it.
Yeah. I think the bottom line is just because the price goes down doesn't necessarily mean it's cheap.
Yes.
That's good to know. One other quick thing I wanted to tell George about is I bought a dump trailer as an investment, and it seems weird, but I was noticing on Craigslist and stuff, these ads where people drop off their dump trailer. They, somebody fills it up, you take it to the dump. So you charge them, you know, the dump fees plus, extra to use your trailer and to haul it and everything, enough to cover all that and then make a couple $100. But it was the turnaround time that got me. Is it's not like a rental property where you rent it out every month. You're renting your trailer out for the day or for every 2 days. So it compounds more quickly. So I thought that would be a good investment, but I need to work on the marketing side of getting it out there to get it rented, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of more of a side hustle than an investment, but it's a great idea, man. Very, really, really cool. So keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate the call. And again, we really appreciate you taking the time to watch my videos and listen to Chris's podcast.
I can't explain to you guys enough how much I appreciate you both. Thank you.
Cool. I hope there's lots of guns and gold and that's safe behind you.
All right. Chris, you got time for one more?
Yeah, I got plenty of time.
Okay. Hi, you're on with Chris Irons from Quote the Raven podcast.
And all of a sudden, I feel severely underdressed.
George, I'm a huge, huge fan of the show, and I've been watching the Rebel Capitalist show and just your personal channel for a while, ever since a couple of years ago. I took a really big deep dive into big macroeconomics.
Okay.
And, you know, and then Chris, a big fan of the podcast. I love your Twitter feed, man. Huge
Thanks,
fan.
Thanks so much.
But I had a question about, you know, what would be a few things that if, you know, as really valuing freedom, liberty, free market capitalism, that, you know, we can really, you know, show to, you know, our family and friends that are in our lives that don't really value those same things as us. And what would be, you know, something that, you know, that talking points, if they're to bring up something that we don't necessarily agree with, or maybe they're just not educated on, And how can we really go about educating those people and maybe just pointing them in the right direction? Like, I already, like, you know, if somebody has a question on like macro or why the government or the Fed is able to do some of the things or why they do it, I really just point them into the direction of George's channel and just be like, listen, this guy is a genius on this stuff. Just go watch him and give him, you know, give him a look. So
thank you very much.
Part of what you have to do is you have to let people discover it on their own too, mm-hmm. right? I think the more that you try to force feed people an ideology, the less likely they are to adopt it. And right. so, you know, what I personally do is, look, I had a family member ask me about Bitcoin the other day, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, everybody assumes that I would go on some huge diatribe about, you know, why I would rather own gold than Bitcoin and this, that, and the other. You know, I gave a very simple answer to a question to somebody that has no clue about Bitcoin at all. Right. You know, and I waited for a follow-up question. And I said, if I get a follow-up question, I'll answer it honestly. And if I don't, I won't say anything else. I mean, that's part of why I'm a libertarian to begin with. I'm not really interested in trying to spread my ideology to everybody else. You know, I'm content. And that's why I'm a libertarian. I don't want to be bothered, and I don't want to bother other people if they're content. Right. But I think, you know, a good way to introduce it also too is, you know, there are a lot of things in people's lives. There are a lot of gripes that people have that mm-hmm. are legitimate gripes with whatever, with, you know, the Department of Motor Vehicles, the line takes too long. You know, it's a great spot to say, look, you know, the government may not be the best at allocating capital or resources, right? You know, in the private sector, somebody would probably be running that business differently because turning a profit would motivate them to get people in and out of the building faster.
Right.
So I think you kind of have to use those like everyday examples to try to, you know, not weasel your ideology in, but kind of gently introduce people to mm-hmm. to the things that make up libertarianism and make up right. you know, the things that we value, right?
I completely agree. Yeah, I was gonna say
people will complain, right? People will complain about anything. They'll complain about mask mandates, they'll complain about having to wear a seatbelt in traffic, they'll complain about bankers abusing the system, they'll complain yeah. about all these things that many libertarians have the same exact gripes with, right? So yeah. it's just a question of just kind of making that little connection. Sorry, George.
No, yeah. no problem, man. If you can just introduce them to Bitcoin, maybe they'll get interested because they think the price is going to go up. They're going to get rich, right. which I don't, you know, I agree with investing just because you think you're going to get rich or hit a home run. But then they'll kind of explore it further on their own. And if you can introduce them, if kind of sink the hook through getting rich, but then you educate them on the philosophical reasons to own Bitcoin or the philosophy yeah. behind sound money. And then they are introduced to, maybe they go down that rabbit hole, then they discover Austrian economics. And then through yeah. that, they discover the value of freedom and liberty, and they do it on their own. And I think that's very yeah. powerful. I'd also encourage introducing them to gold, the sound money principles. Then maybe yeah. like a Ron Paul video on something, because Ron Paul's, you know, he's just such a great guy. And even if you disagree with him, it's hard to say, oh, that guy's, I hate that guy. You know, it's very difficult to do. So I always encourage doing something like that. Now, as far as the specific, I think probably what you're referring to are the, we'll call them the mandates, keep it YouTube friendly. I always bring up a 1905 Supreme Court case with Ferguson versus Massachusetts. Because that's where they always go back, you know, the CNN watcher. And says, well, there you go. The Supreme Court decided on it. It's a done deal. Therefore, we should have it today. And you say, well, time out. Let's just, I understand that 1905 case, but let's look at the 1927 case as well, Buck versus Bell, where they use 1905 as a precedent for their decision to legalize eugenics. And so when they bring up the 1905 case, say, listen, you're proving my point here in the sense that, yes, it's not about the restrictions we have today, or it's not just about the restrictions we have today, but you have to ask yourself, by giving the government the power and that control, how can they use it against you in the future? And what have they done in the past? And then they start to look at that cost benefit analysis. when they're just considering the virus and the medicine, we'll call it. Now, all of a sudden, there's a third component in there that they need to consider that would probably tip them in the favor of, okay, these costs really don't make, or the small benefits that we're receiving really are far outweighed by the costs that we're paying, not only myself today, but my kids and grandkids potentially in the future.
Listen, I'm an idiot, okay? And so when you start bringing up Supreme Court cases to me, I'm like, fucking see you later. My brain just like, whatever, you know? Like, this isn't Doritos in a football game, right? I don't understand that at all. I think, you know, I just want to disagree with you, though. I don't think that you should be luring people in with a get-rich-quick promise on Bitcoin to bait.
Not a promise, but that's what...
It doesn't matter. I think that's part of the problem with the Bitcoin bull case is that people are getting sucked in on the notion that they're going to be able to get rich on it. And I think that's what's nefarious about it. So I think, you know, I feel like I have a duty to not do that. I feel like that's part of the, if I'm trying to get, even if the ends are going to justify the means, I'm going to try to get to my ideology after that, whatever. Right. And I agree with everything else George said. I would just say, like, I would steer clear of Supreme Court cases when you start talking to people and just be like, hey, like, look at the size of the fucking Kit Kat bar that you're eating. Right. It's smaller than it was last year and it costs 20% more. Like, that's fucking weird. You know? Right. You know, like, and just start very, very, very small.
Probably a better approach now that I think about it.
And I don't like disagreeing with you, George, because I think generally you're much smarter than I am.
No, I totally agree with both of you guys. I think that, like, just summing it up, I think it's it's almost at the point of finding those like certain pain points that are relatable to the average Joe, just like you said, like, you know, shrinkflation or, you know, the DMV line or stuff like that. And I think that it's really just encouraging them to ask the question, like, why is this? Because I mean, like, that's really, you know, how it started for me. I remember, you know, back in 2019 when the cervasis sickness came out, it really started with me just asking myself, how are people able to do this? And why are people able to do this? And then, you know, you just start asking the seven layer why question. And it really just snowballs into this, you know, almost like a free thinking mindset of where you just continuously asking why.
With healthy skepticism.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it just really just encouraging people to ask that question why and continuously try and think for themselves and be a free thinker. And I think, thank you. Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate the call. I know Chris has got to run. All right, guys. Well, we want to encourage you to continue to stand up and fight for freedom and liberty. And we'll see you on the next video.